Everyone, it's so good to be back. Hi, everyone. It's so good to be back. Week two, step two. My name is Donna, and I am a recovered alcoholic. My sobriety date is August 5th, 2000. And last week, I made it real clear that I didn't stop drinking on that day. Something happened to me. I was surrendered. I was at a point where I was too exhausted to continue to try to stop drinking. And something happened in and through me, in spite of me, that the obsession to drink was lifted. Now, it doesn't have to happen that way for everyone. For those of you that are new, I highly, highly suggest that you go to your home group. If you don't have a big book, you find out how you can get one. And because we know in this program that not everybody comes in that can afford to buy a book, so most home groups will get a book for you. Before I started speaking, I changed my setting so that I saw each person come in and give their day count. And I'm reminded that we are people that don't normally mix from different parts of the country, different accents. Men, women, different ages. But we have one thing in common, that we're no longer drinking. There are some people that are new fellows, and there's some fellows that have been around for a while. But it doesn't matter because we're all in this one meeting together. And so last week we talked about step one. I have to get to a place that I am convinced that I don't have power over alcohol. So I was in a workshop and they were talking about compliance versus surrender. And I'm just going to real briefly take a look at what compliance looks like. So it's an outward cooperation, right? It's kind of like partial acceptance, but and a partial acceptance and partial surrender. So I may agree with these 12 steps. I may agree that I have to come to meetings. I may agree that I have to have a sponsor. I'll go along. I won't resist the meetings. I won't resist doing, some people do 90 meetings in 90 days, and they won't resist doing that. But the thing that's still there is there's this hidden reservation. It's like, I'll do this because I have to, because I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it says I must go through these 12 steps and I must go to meetings. But there's still an internal desire to remain in control. And then we look at surrender. And it's entirely different. It's a wholehearted acceptance of reality. I got to really admit, you know what? I'm convinced that on my own, I don't have the power to stay stopped. Now, for those of you that are in the big book, there's four chapters: doctor's opinion, Bill's story, there is a solution, and more about alcoholism. And it seems like it's like they're being kind of sarcastic. The last paragraph and more about alcoholism. So four chapters so that you can ask yourself, did you obsess over alcohol? Did your body crave it? And you had no mental defense. So now it says once more. You're kidding me. After four chapters, that's how they start the sentence. Once more, the alcoholic at certain times has no effective mental defense against the first drink. Now, sometimes I can stay away from it. But see, it's those times that I stay away from it that my mind makes me think that I've got power. See, I think if I never was able to put a block of time together, I probably would have admitted defeat and realized, you know what, I'm never going to beat this game. But I kept having these long stretches where there was no drinking. So I'm at this place. This is a question because when we read the big book, we turn statements into questions. I'm asking you, do you really believe that you have no mental defense and you need a power to stand between you and your hand, you and your mind? So if you can say that, we can move on to step two. And step two is not telling you need to have faith. See, I can't have faith if I haven't had an experience in anything. And I shared this last week where I think, I don't know, I shared so many different meetings, but so I've never had even an inclination to even think about God. Now, this is after 13 years of Catholic school and kindergarten. I thought it was praise and worship, but I didn't hear anything about a reliance. This was a whole new thing for me. But because I was so beat down and life the way normal people was living, it wasn't working for me. You know, most people are pretty happy in life. Power, money, and prestige. They got some money. They got their health. They got a nice pad, and they're doing fine. I gave my apartment away. I wasn't paying the rent. My health, I wasn't going to sleep. I'm staying up for 4 or 5 days. I'm not going to the dentist. I'm just telling them pull the teeth because I'm too cheap to pay for a root canal to pull them. Right? My moral behavior is down the toilet because the more I can't stay away from alcohol, the more of a liar I am, the more of a cheat, the more irresponsible, the more manipulative my behavior matched my no choice. So that's what I come to you guys with. But what gives me hope is I hear you share what you were like, what happened, and what you're like today. And when I came in, what people were like, I still was like. So they gave me hope. So I'm willing to believe that on my own, I don't have the power to stay stopped completely, forever. A woman came up to me when I was new. She said, "Don, are you willing to go to any length never to drink again?" See, I had never, no one ever asked me that. I just kept hearing, just don't drink for today. And my mind interpreted that as for the rest of my life, I've got to be conscious about not drinking. Now, I'm 45 now, and I'm saying to myself, you know what? I don't even want to think about alcohol. Are you kidding me? Every day I gotta just for today. So when the person said, "Are you willing to go to any length, never to drink again?" I said, "Yes." Just the sound of it. Because I have been drinking since I was 14, 14 to 44. You mean to tell me that I'm gonna live my life and alcohol is never gonna be a thing for me? Yes. But I got this reservation. I'm complying. I want to do it, but I got this resistance. So the book makes it very clear, Donna, no one's asking you to have faith. We just want you to be willing to believe. And so I don't even see, these are questions I never asked myself. Are you agnostic? Well, I didn't even know what the word meant. See, because growing up, see, my ego wouldn't allow me to admit when I didn't know a word when I was reading. That's how my ego is. It wouldn't let me admit I didn't know. So I was a skimmer. I would skim over words. And what I realized is I'm so busy looking at what I want people to do for me that I can't even see what I'm doing to me. I'm stopping my own growth. So as a result of going through the big book line by line and looking up words that I didn't know, I was able to sit on the New York City subway and pull out a dictionary and didn't care what people thought because I worried about what people thought about me all my life. How free do you want to be? As simple as being able to pull out a dictionary and don't care who knows I don't know the word. So let's look at agnostic. We agnostic. It doesn't say we were. I am faced with my agnosticism and all the time I've been in AA. There's always something that I've been holding on to as a safety net and reliance instead of my creator. Now, I don't have a problem saying the word God. Some people do. And your mind will stop you from doing this work just because it doesn't like the word. Don't do that to yourself. See, this book gives us many, many, many different spiritual terms. Pick one that doesn't make you bristle. So we look at agnostic. And it means somebody who does not rely or know if there is a God that is personal in their life and is going to work in their life. Now, I might believe in God, but I didn't necessarily believe that God was going to work in my life. I was too afraid to believe that if I let go of control, that God was going to handle all of my affairs. Because my mind says things like, but then what? Well, what if? Well, how will I know? So there's got to be somewhere in this process that my mind does not speak louder than the spirit within. Now, it happened on August 5th, 2000. But see, as long as I think that I can live and I can live life and I can control, all of a sudden my ego starts becoming my God again. All right, so now I'm not drinking. But wait a minute, I don't know how to feel. I don't know how to deal with my feelings. I don't know how to be with people. So it's not like the first time I ever had a job. It's not the first time I'm around my family. It's not the first time that I'm doing a whole bunch of things, but it is the first time I'm doing this stuff sober, and I don't know how to live. Because I ran from my feelings or I numbed my feelings. So I really can't rely on my mind because my mind just makes me more anxious, more fearful, more doubtful. So I better be seeking something that's going to give me saner results. What is step two? Am I willing to believe that there is a, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity? Restore. You only restore things that are worth saving. So if I get a piece of furniture from IKEA and it breaks, I don't know if I'm going to restore that. I probably just throw that out. But if I have an heirloom or something that I invested money in, you better believe I'm going to restore because it's worth it. So you are worth restoring. Return back to our natural state. Now, if you think about it, most of us, if not all of us, grew up around a lot of selfishness, self-centered human beings. I don't think there was anybody in my life that introduced me to the spiritual life that I get to discover while I'm here with you guys. This opportunity to go home. That's how I, what I call, we get to go home within the true self within. But I always wanted love. But if you listen to me, sounds like I didn't have any experience with love. But what is this thing that I think that I need in my life that I don't really ever experience? So perhaps where we're going, we get restored to go back to our original selves. So we were born out of love, right? So I get restored to sanity, right-sized thinking. My thinking on self-will is selfish, self-centered. I think it's all about me. I don't really notice how my behavior is affecting me. I'm going to tell you an experience I had today with my sister. We're doing a project together, business. And she said something to me because my brother-in-law and my nephew are, they're videotape editors. They won Emmys. And I put together a video using Canva, okay, for those of you that know the platform. I'm not a video, I'm not an award, Emmy award-winning anything. So she told me, so I shared it with her because she's doing the website with me, the business. And she said, oh, well, Kevin and Omari said, as soon as she told me what they said, I started to feel defensive. I started to feel like I'm not good enough. And it reflected in my tone. All of a sudden, I needed to defend. And she was quiet. She got off the phone. But see, I'm awakened today. And that's what happens when we talk about step four, we'll get there. I was so awakened that I knew that my behavior was not one of being connected. That behavior was making me feel separated, competitive. And that's not the truth. And so I called her. And what came to me today, which was powerful, this is why you have to be willing to believe that you are not this great big such a much that you think you are, so that you can have these amazing experiences. Now, it may not sound so amazing to you, and it's not going to sound so amazing to me tomorrow, because I can't live off of yesterday's experience. But right here, right now, today, I'm like, you know what? I don't know why I'm always afraid to let people know when I behaved a certain way or acted a certain way, because they're seeing it. If I can see it, I know you can see it. But see, I lived my life asleep, not wanting to see it, and convincing myself that you don't see it either. So that's how I was able to hurt people and not care. And so when I called her, I said, you know, and she's not in program. I said, you know what, Sheila, usually I have these phone calls with people in program. I said, but you know what, I realized that I really shouldn't have difficulty in admitting when I was wrong, because you already know it. And she said, yeah, that's why I'm patient. I said, yeah, but you shouldn't have to be patient. I shouldn't rely on your patience for me to think I can say anything that I want to say because you're going to be patient. I could never have had that conversation before. And so what I was able to say is, listen, in the future, do you want me to include them in on the email so that I can get their expertise and look at it from a place of togetherness, not, oh God, I don't want them to say anything because, you know, they do what they do. So this is, I bring these experiences up because this is how we learn to live. But I got to start somewhere, and I got to be willing to admit that I need power. Four chapters, guys, four chapters to just say, okay, once again, do you think you have power? So I want everybody to say, even if it's a compliance and you're not really fully surrendered, admit that you don't have any power, so we can move on to we agnostics. And it's like, okay, now where do I begin? They make it real simple. I should have had bookmarks in the book so I can go to it right away, but I can't. I know we're on the recording. Okay, here we go. So on page 46, if you don't know where to begin, they give us five ways to begin to be willing. Now, the first thing is you get your own conception. And if the word God bothers you, don't use this as an excuse, because your mind will use anything for an excuse so that it can stay being your God. Oh, you don't like the word God, then you can't do this program. That's not true. The first thing on page 46, it says, lay aside prejudice. You guys say the set aside prayer. Set aside everything you think you know. Because you're going to be living like that for the rest of your life. Can I live my life and not know? If you're going to live like that for the rest of your life, why not start now? Lay aside prejudice. The second thing, have a willingness to believe. Now, they're not even saying believe. Just have a willingness. See how they're making it so easy for you? Just have a willingness to believe. Admit the possible existence of a creative intelligence, an intelligence that's more smarter than you. Are you willing to admit the possible existence? Spirit of the universe. This power that is governing everything. And the next thing is earnestly seek. Just keep putting one foot in front of the other on the path. Keep going to meetings. You never know what meeting there's going to be a messenger in that meeting that's going to say just what you need to say. We hear it all the time in regular life. You ever been in a grocery store and you had a conversation with someone and they go, oh my God, I needed to hear that. There's a lot of truth to that. We get placed where we're needed. See, our responsibility, and I'm not just going to say me, I'm going to include you in on this. Our responsibility is to go through this work so we can see what beliefs and what thought life is keeping us separated from the great reality within, because we talk about that in this chapter. The reality is that there is this spirit within me that saved me from me, removed the obsession, because damn sure I couldn't do it. If the power can do that, what can it not do? So I'm laying aside prejudice. Stop thinking you can think down. Lay aside what you think, you know. Be willing to believe in the possible existence. Just keep seeking. And then it says, don't let any prejudice you have against spiritual terms deter you from honestly asking yourself what they mean to you. See, the thing is, see, we've never challenged our belief system. My mind tells me, oh, I don't believe in God. Well, do I ever say, well, why? Like, what am I basing it on? So they're saying, honestly ask yourself what these terms mean to you. And you can tell every spiritual term in this book because it's initial capped. Creative intelligence, spirit of the universe, czar of the heaven. Pick one that feels comfortable, that doesn't make you. Start. They're not asking you to have faith. You can't have faith in something that you haven't tried yet. It's just like if I have a computer and Marion gives me a business card and says, yo, Donna, go take your computer to this guy. I know he can fix it. I'm not taking the computer on faith. I've never used the guy. But I'm going on a willingness to believe based on what Marion said. He fixes it. The next time I have another laptop, iPhone, guess what? I'm going back in faith because I've had the experience. Faith is a result of results. So if you have apprehension about God, join the crowd. Because you will see as you live your life, you have been relying on everything outside of you to live. And if you're anything like me, there's going to come a time when those things stop working. I'm at a point in my life right now. See, I don't have any shame to my game. I feel the more I share it, the freer I become. I'm at a place that there is some financial fear that could have me paralyzed. And I've been on this path, be willing to believe, willing to believe, willing to believe that the other, and it was this week or last week. See, I don't even time. We as a human being, we spend too much
Minutes,
energy,
Donna.
too much thought on time. But I'm willing to believe that God is my safety net and my supplier. It took me a while to say that, not feel like, oh my God, what does that look like? But then what? It tells us, and actually, we were fooling ourselves to think that there's no creator, there's no spirit of the universe, there's no power to rely on. Actually, we're fooling ourselves, for deep down in every man and child is a fundamental idea of God. So we get to see that even in the people that I dislike, maybe if I'm willing to go to any length and continue to seek, that I'll look past their personality and their behavior, and I'll be able to recognize that the great reality is deep down within too. And that's how we learn to live. The world and its people stop having power over us because we can look at people with empathy. And you know why? Because people like us know what it lives, know what it means to live life like you're dying. So if I know what that feels like, that I want to die because I don't know how to live. Trust and believe. I can see when other people are having a bad day. I know what it's like, and then some. That's how we're able to be used by our creator, because we've been there. So I think she gave me the 2-minute warning. I can go on and on and on. Trust and believe that. But I'm going to end there. And this is why I like to go through this book line by line. And word by word, because this is a word by word exercise, because they say they show how the change, oh, this I gotta say. They show visible proof how the change came over them, not how they changed. We get changed through us in us in spite of us. All I have to be willing to admit that I'm willing to grow, I'm willing to be different. So I know that there's a meeting after the meeting. This is the kind of meeting I'll hang out. I hung out like a long time last week. Maybe I'll do the same again. But thank you guys for allowing me to be part of this series. It's always an honor to be asked to do one of these deals. So thank you.
Thank you so much, Donna. Another brilliant step study with you.